Okay, thank you. So first, of course, as the second student of Andreas to be talking, that there's a little something that should be said, and just like Todd said, I've had a wonderful time in Ann Arbor working with Andreas. It was, of course, a bit nerve-wracking the first time I went there, coming to a strange country, working with somebody. I had no idea who this was, whether he was nice or not. And clearly, everybody here knows that this ended all extremely well, because there's few people nicer and more pleasant to work with than Andreas. Even though we've never discussed any stains on his desk, we've discussed lots of different subjects, and I found the same thing, that whatever you throw at Andreas, he has something sensible to say about. For a little while, it was almost a challenge with me to find something I was interested in and which he couldn't say anything about, and I can only say, apparently my interests are a subset of his knowledge, so it's always worked out very well. Then about the talk, I have this sort of general unease about talking in public like this, and for this usually I ask to talk early in the conference, and this time I clearly forgot, it brings to mind a very nice conference in University of North Texas, where Andreas was the first speaker, and I was the last speaker, and Andreas goes, does his little talk, and then he comes and he sits down next to me and he says, so, now I can enjoy the conference. Okay, so in about 45 minutes I can enjoy the conference as well. Okay, so there you go. So what I'll talk about are confinatory groups and generating threats. And this is a nice subject to talk about here too, because I was here in the beginning of August and I gave a talk, and if everybody who was here would have been there, I wouldn't have given the introduction and I could just go to the meat of the talk right away. So for those who weren't there, I'll do a little bit of a refresher, so to say. First thing is, of course, what are these groups that I'm talking about, and why do I care? So I write sim of n for the symmetric group on the natural numbers, the bijections from the natural numbers to the natural numbers, the operation is composition, and if I take an element from this group, I call it cofinitary, exactly when either this thing is the identity or its collection of fixed points is finite. So I have permutations are identity or finite. Those are the ones I care about. And if you have a subgroup of this group, then we call it cofinitary all its elements are. And the groups that are, in some sense, most of interest to me, but I actually will only use them for motivation today, are those groups which are maximal cofinitary groups. And these, of course, are cofinitary groups that are maximal with respect to inclusion. And it's very easy to see that the axiom of choice makes them exist, because it's a local property, so unions of cofinitary groups, unions of an inclusion chain of cofinitary groups are cofinitary. And so we have that these things exist. To mention the standard requisite comments about their sizes at this point, Adelaki and Truss have shown that they cannot be countable, the maximal cofinitary groups. The methods for showing this, which they didn't use, but which now make it very easy to see, I'll talk about later. Neumann showed that there exists a cofinitary group of size continuum. With the axiom of choice, you can extend this to a maximal one, so you always have a maximal cofinitary group of size continuum. And Yi Jian, one of our organizers in absentia, has shown that if the continuum is there is consistence that the continuum is big and that cofinitary groups exist, maximal cofinitary groups exist, which are of smaller cardinality. So these are already from that point of view reasonable objects to study for set theorists like myself. The nice observation to make at this point, which is good for motivations, is that if you have such a group, then it is a cofinitary group exactly when you're dealing with an almost disjoint family. So cofinitary groups are groups that happen to be almost disjoint families. So from just this property that you're almost disjoint from the identity, or you're the identity, this property arises by the group structure to the property as the whole group is almost disjoint, and this follows from the trivial equivalence that with a group structure you can get equal points where they're equal to fixed points of other elements of the group. So we're looking at almost disjoint families that are also groups. Now about almost disjoint and maximal almost disjoint families, we know an awful lot. And some of the things which are very interesting to me about them is that Matthias has shown that they cannot be analytic, and Mills has shown that they can be co-analytic. So we have certain information about the complexity of these groups, of maximal families of subsets of the natural numbers. And we could try and say, well, there's similarity in the definition. Can we do similar things for these maximal cofinitary groups? And so on the lower bounds, the progress has been less than stellar, which means that the upper bounds, we don't know if they actually, well, they are upper bounds, but we don't know if they're sharp. But at least it's known. This is a theorem by Gao and Zhen, that if you assume the axiom of constructibility, then you get a maximal cofinitary group with a pi 1-1 generating set. So, and the strategy for doing this is to take exactly Miller's method for constructing just a math family of subsets of the natural numbers that is co-analytic, and applying it to groups. And so you need to do some serious work in getting a nice encoding into your group elements, or into your generating elements, and then by the general method, this all works out. And so how do you do this, or what is part of the ideas that go in this? Well, one part is the coding, which I will say exactly nothing about. The other part is the method of good extensions, which is sort of the general method, or a general method for constructing maximal cofinitary groups in this sort of situation. And the idea is you assume, you make some nice assumption, CH makes the picture easiest to see, and then you start constructing your maximal, your cofinitary group. You start with some small group, whatever you desire, and step by step you add elements to it. And so your alpha plus first approximation to your group is obtained by adding a new generator to this. And one of the big difficulties is that you have to construct this new bijection such that all elements in this group are cofinitary. So you need to be able to construct it without adding tons and tons of fixed points. You're greatly helped at this point by the fact that this group is isomorphic to, or identical, however you look at it, the group you get by taking G of alpha with the free product with the free group on one generator and substituting into this for X the new generator you have constructed or you intend to construct. And if you substitute this in, then you get a nice description of this group. And what this binds you is that the elements in here are nice words. They're objects of the form, say, x1 to the k1, g2, x2 to the k2. Nice words in these variables, where the g1 up to gn are from the group g alpha. And you just substitute this new generator into it. So you have a nice combinatorial description of arbitrary new elements of this group. And what you need to do, or what we do with this G alpha is, well, we don't know how to get it all at once, so we make it by finite approximations, and you take your finite approximations and you make them bigger and bigger and bigger, and the key is into taking some finite approximation that you have, extend it to a bigger finite approximation, and not introduce any too many fixed points if you do this operation infinitely many times. So let me draw and explain a little picture which is helpful here, and that is the to my mind right way to look at this word. It's nice, but it's nice syntactical, but pictures are even better. So the picture is you draw a bunch of vertical lines. These represent different copies of the natural numbers, and as you go from the right to the left, you fill in these elements you have in the word here. So the first one here is GN, and there is here a complete bijection filled in. The next one is some power of X. Well, you can't really fill it in, but you can imagine putting in the graphs of the finite approximations you have, and this way you can continue all the way to the end. And then if you have one of these finite approximations, you can sort of draw it in here and see how elements act, or how things behave in this group, by saying, well, how does this act on a natural number? Well, you take this natural number n, and step by step you can evaluate it and see where it goes to. You might, of course, get stuck because you only have finite functions stuck in here, but you can see how far you go. And this is sort of a nice picture representation where you have here the evaluation path of this word on some natural number. Okay? Everybody good on this? Okay, so then back to the difficulty we had. We wanted you to construct this G alpha without getting too many new fixed points. And what you can do, and what Yuzheng has done, is look at this picture and say, well, when do I get new fixed points? And that I cannot avoid getting. Sometimes maybe we could avoid all fixed points. Well, you quickly come to the conclusion that you can't. So you look for which can I not avoid. And what you see is that if you have a word W, which is of the form U inverse Z U, so which we can draw in our picture something like this. This is where U acts. This is where Z acts. This is where U inverse acts. And if you have a finite function, such a GS, and you substitute it in here, and you look at what happens in this picture, how things act, if it now turns out that you have a fixed point here for this inner word Z, but it's not yet, it doesn't yet give rise to a fixed point of the whole word, then it's only because if you extend this evaluation path, somewhere here you come to a hole where things aren't defined. but because it's a conjugation of a word of a bijection with a fixed point, however you conjugate it, this fixed point will always become a fixed point of the whole thing. So these are unavoidable. So now if you're in an extremely good mood or just in a very positive state of mind, you could say, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow all fixed points other than this one particular type which I came up with, and I'm going to avoid these. Because I'm in a positive mood, I'm going to immediately give it a name, good extensions. And the amazing thing that turns out, at least to me is amazing, is that you can do this. There's one objection to this one situation where you get new fixed points. That's the only new fixed points you have to allow. In no other way do you have to allow new fixed points to arise in your words W. So you only allow them if W decomposes in some way and some conjugate subword like this has a fixed point and it has grown to the outside. That we allow, nothing else we allow. So what do you need to show that this is enough? Well, you need to do things like domain extension, range extension, and hitting F. So domain extension means that you need to end up with a bijection, so you need to take any point which you need to be able to take any points which is not yet in the domain and add it. So you need to take any point and be able to map it somewhere. And if you do this and you do a nice four-level deep binary case distinction, then it is all fairly straightforward to show that you can do this. And the same with the range extension, adding arbitrary points to your range. An easy but long argument gives you that this is also possible. And for the hitting F, there's also a nice combinatorial argument like that, and a nice picture proof, which I will also omit. So this is method by Yi Zhang, and if you have these things, then you can construct a maximal cofinite array group, and if you then on top of this insert Miller's methods of coding things into your generators, then you get a Pi-1-1 generating set. So of course this is a very nice result, and the reason you just get a generating set and not a whole family is that, well, you have a group. If you add one element to it, you also add lots of other elements to it. The one element you consciously added, the G alpha you can encode into, the other elements seem much harder to encode in. And you can in fact show that it is much harder to encode into them. And the usual uniform sort of encoding doesn't work, but the uniform encoding is asking too much anyway. So what you can get is a Pi-1-1 maximal cofinite array group by using this method of good extensions and doing a little bit more complicated encoding and realizing that you have the room to allow some non-uniformity in your encoding. Okay. So with this, there are several interesting things. To me, interesting things to note. One is that this method of good extension gives you, in this sort of context, always maximal cofinite array groups. But what you get is that free extensions always give rise to free groups. The group you construct this way, for any word in this group, you make sure that it has only finitely many fixed points, so no word is a relator, which means that you're in a free group. And if you're looking for the minimum possible complexity of cofinite array groups, it might very well be different between free groups and groups in general. There might be a group where lots of relations are true, which is which is simple, and every free group might be complicated. Something like this. So there's a nice question here, which is fairly open. What are the possible isomorphism types of maximal cofinitary groups or cofinitary groups? There's one restriction. A maximal cofinitary, there's one restriction I know of, and that is a maximal cofinitary group cannot be abelian by our birthday boy. So they cannot be abelian. Any other restriction we really don't know about. On the other hand, we do know that you can have certain non-free groups. For instance, taking this method and changing it in the method in the way I'll talk a little bit about in a little bit, you can get a maximal cofinitary group under MA into which any countable group embeds. So that's clearly not a free group, but the proof is cheating, so it's not so good. The other thing you can do by a very different method is under Martin's axiom construct a locally finite maximal cofinitary group. And locally finite is also clearly not free, but it appears that it's still free-ish, because there seem to be no relations universally true in this group, so it's still not the most interesting thing. Well, it's fascinating, but it's not quite the thing we want to get out of it. Now, if you look at these two theorems you have here, then you could ask, and it was asked by Anatoly Virchik when I showed this in Russia at some point. Well, you have these two theorems, co-analytic generating set, analytic group. How different are they really? And then, because this is a bit out of way, you can ask sort of the more down-to-earth version of this question, and that is to say, does there exist a uniformly recursive sequence, countable sequence of generators? So this is a very nice everything computable sequence of generators, such that the isomorphism type of the group they generate is not recursive. And not recursive means that there does not exist a bijection between this group and the natural numbers, such that the multiplication in this group goes to a recursive function of two natural numbers. It's clear immediately that this needs a non-free group, because a countable free group is mostly recursive. But it turns out that the answer is yes, by a combination of the modification of these good extensions I mentioned, which gave rise to a cofinite, maximal cofinitary group universal for countable groups. This is the what I've called the method of applying relations, and this gives rise to a method to construct non-free groups. Next to that, you need to do to find the right isomorphism type of your group and the right way to approximate this. This is by an ID which I've called demure sequences. This is approximations of sets of relators which are quite well behaved. And then finally, you need some easy computability theory and group theory. Okay. So I'll spend the last 15 minutes on giving some snapshots of the proof. There's no way I can give all the ideas that are involved, but I'll try and give some nice picture up to a point of what's going on anyway. So the first thing to do is set up a little bit of context. What we're going to do is use a method very similar to this good extension method to get this to happen. But we're going to work with countably many generators. So we start with a sequence of countably many variables. We also want to be able to talk about restrictions of this, nice initial segments. And on this, then of course F of X bar is the free group on countably many generators, where these are the generators, and F of X bar restrictive to F, which we also write F of X bar, I'll introduce that later. This is the free group on just these finitely many generators, and we have a notation which turns out to be very handy to talk about this. If you have a subset of this group, then we write R restricted to S, for R intersects F of X restricted to S. So this is the set of those words in R which involve only the variables up to S minus 1. And now what we want to do is we want to, just like here, help by the fact that we saw here. And if we have this sort of syntactic object, we get an actual free group. We want here to find a set of words, the relators, the elements that are going to represent the identity, such that this syntactic group is the group we want, which means that this should be a group which I'd like to call G omega, which is the group such that in the exponents of G omega we encode a certain set which is too complicated. So then what we get is what I want is that n is in A if and only if there exists a G such that G to the sum function of n is the identity, and if you have this and this function is sufficiently well behaved, then you have encoded the set A in a sigma 1 way into the multiplication of the group, and if this is recursive, then this would say A is an RE set. And the set we need to choose for A turns out to be, you take yourself a delta 0, 2 set that is not RE, then you have nice approximations for this set, but it shouldn't be able to be expressed like this in terms of a recursive requirement. So that would do the job. Okay, now if we take A like this, and we want this to happen, you could say, well, WID should be, what should it be? It should be some correction of XI to the NI, where NI is equal to F of N for some N in A, and you notice that now what you have is a very nice set of relations that would give rise to this result, but this is not a recursive set because A is too complicated. So you need good approximations to this particular set, and exactly by our choice here of the set, delta 0, 2, you have very good approximations, because for a delta 0, 2 set, it is the case that the characteristic function at I is equal to the limit of, say, at n of I towards infinity of h of n I for some nice recursive function. So you have that the final decision about whether n is in this set or not can be approximated, and over time, at some point, this is 0 or 1, and it stays 0 or 1, and then you have the right approximation to the set you're looking at. This gives rise to working with these WS of YDs, which is what you have at state X, and this looks slightly more complicated. I put in the correct functions here. N is greater than I, or it is the case that from point I up to point S, it looks like N was going to be in the set. So this is some way of getting the right generator with the right power, and either N is greater than I, in which case there's no requirements on this being in the set, or it is the case that from point I up to point F, where we currently are, we have always believed N to be in the set A. And as soon as we for a moment believe that it's not in the set A, we throw it out, but because there's infinitely many I's for every N from the point we believe onward, everything works out. And this is a nice recursive approximation, and if you take the limit of f towards infinity, you get exactly the right set of elements. And because also here, so this is slightly cheating, because if you want to take this sort of object, you should make this a normal subgroup, so you should take the normal closure of this set. But it is very important in the rest of the construction that these WS of ID, that they are very simple sets. This is I won't give the definition, but this is so nicely behaved, it's what I call the demure sequence of generators. There are just powers here, and there's sort of no inference between very large generators and the very small generators, which makes it very well behaved. Okay, but let's look at the key idea. This is applying relations. So we now have our relations to apply, and here we're going to do it. So if you look at what we did here with the good extensions, then you see that at some point you have an approximation W of GS, where GS is the final approximation to what you have in the end, and everything you know about this particular group element is what you see here. It's a clear situation of what you see is what you get. There's nothing additional that comes in. But if you have a group where lots of relations are true, then so you might have one word, but some other word represents the same element in the group in the end. These two syntactic words are the same modulo this normal subgroup we have. And it might very well be that if you fill in here the approximations you have so far for some collection of elements you're talking about, that these two things are not the same. So that's the one word gives you different amounts of information about this group element in the end than some other word. So you should say that, well, at this stage, when I have my sequence of approximations to my generators, what do I really know about this particular group element? Well, what you really know is, let's take a closure operation written by a tilde. What you really know, or what you've really already committed to, you might not know it, because, well, if you knew it, then you didn't have to look for it. But what you really have committed to for this group element is the union of all words that represent the same element of these words. And this is quite possibly a lot bigger than what you just have here about the information of this particular bijection. You get a lot more information here. Now, what we're doing is these sequences, the approximations to our countable sequence of generators, are going to be finite support sequences of finite functions, finite injections, the right sort of thing to approximate the countable sequence of bijections with. And in here, this is now going to be also nice and finite. It hasn't blown up to being infinite, because if you take the union over domains and ranges of all the natural numbers that appear in here, this sort of element can only speak about the natural numbers that sort of already appear in here. And that is because these W primes are in this free group, so there are no group elements that you already had constructed to deal with. Everything is nice and fresh. So this here is still finite. Now, it might be finite and extremely complicated, but because of the fact that our sequences of relations we're looking at is so well behaved, you guess that this is in fact recursive in the set of generators you already started with. You don't you only have to look at finite length conjugates at this point, and only at finitely many of the relations you're talking about, because you only have to look at those variables that are in the support of this sequence. Anything else is completely undefined, so doesn't add anything to this union. So this is what you have to deal with. You have some approximation of your generator so far, and what it seems you have is there's more that you have already committed to than what is in plain sight. And so what you would like, is to take this information which is not in plain sight and put it in plain sight. That's to say, what would be very nice is if you could have some operation on your sequences of approximations to the generators you have in the end, such that let's call it tilde again, such that now it is the case that if you put it in a word and you take this closure, that what you get is exactly what you got from just putting in the extended generators. So you can take the information which otherwise you always have to look for and put it in plain sight, if you could do something like this. That's the goal here. Well, this operation is what I call applying relations, and the trick is exactly that to get the closure of the ith approximation. What is the information you already know about the ith element? Well, we know an expression for this. This is exactly taking the union over all words that are equivalent to xi, the ith generator, and take the union over the whole sequence of generators. So in order to get all the information of what you already have committed to in your approximation to the ith generator, you can use this same idea, but just for the ith generator itself. Now you need to be a little bit careful, because it's quickly going to be the case that you lose the finite support of your sequence, so you shouldn't, in this extension from a sequence of approximations to a sequence of approximations, do this for every possible I, but you should only do this for the finitely many I that are in the support, and possibly one or two more that you need, that you happen to need in the argument you're performing. And then you're keeping it finite support, But the argument I gave before, that this is finite, this is still finite. So we have a nice extension of what's going on. But in the last 3 minutes, but what we need to see a couple of things before this turns out to be useful. Of course, we had our set of words which are supposed to represent the identity element, so presumably this sequence of approximation already satisfies that for every word in this WID, it is the case that if you evaluate it on these elements, you get the identity where it's defined, everywhere it's defined. And now we've taken our approximations and we've enlarged them, and you need to see that this enlargement doesn't ruin this property. Once you have an element which has no fixed point, you've lost. Once you have an element that has a point that's not fixed, you're lost in making these things the identity. And for this, there's one view of the situation which... One view of this exact same operation which solves the problem, and I'll end with that one, and it is that there exists a different way to describe this particular closure of the element U of I. And the way to do it is to say, well, I'm going to put the pair AB in this G of I, so that's to say, I'm going to map A to B in the extension. When should I do this? Well, I should do this if there exists W prime such that XI W prime is a word that is supposed to represent the identity, and it's the case that W prime inverse of the approximation we have so far of B is equal to A. Okay, what's the fixture? The fixture of this is that you have a relator where there is one place where you would stick in this GI. So you have here your W prime, here is your XI, and this word needs to be the identity in order to get your isomorphism type of the group as you want it in the end. Well, when do you know you need to map A to B in a relator like this? If it is the case that this whole relator is defined so far, And B. Yeah. Oh, no inverse here. Pardon. And if B maps to A, then however you complete this XI, it needs to map A to B, because if A is mapped anywhere else, then this relator doesn't result in being a bijection, which is the identity. And so, and it turns out that if you just extend in this particular way, then you get exactly the same thing as you get by extending in this way. And the way you can see this is that sort of all the pairs you add in here, you can replace everything you've added by other W's, by the relators and sticking in the XI and making one that's everywhere defined except in this one last place. It'll come out. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Are there any questions?
Okay. I kill all the relations.
Mm-hmm.
If you speak about the same paper, related to paper by Magna.
I'm not sure I know that paper.
And anyhow, we kill the trust paper, which I know, kill all the relations, we end up with a tree.
Yes.
We have star tree.
Yes. So this is the same thing you get here. And so the way you manage to keep